This is the Middle East Monitor podcast from the Voice of America. I'm Paul Westphaling in the VOA News Center in Washington. The Turkish president says on this Monday the weekend protests in his country were inspired by terrorists. Reaction in the Palestinian community to the appointment of a new prime minister, some like him, some don't. Iran seeks to exert more influence in Afghanistan, despite sharp differences in religious ideology with the Taliban. Stay tuned for these and other stories coming up. The appointment of a new prime minister of the Palestinian Authority by President Mahmoud Abbas has received support from his Fatah movement, but criticism from the rival Hamas movement. VOA Scott Bob reports from the VOA Bureau in Jerusalem.
Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas announced that the head of the West Bank's Al-Najah University, Rami Hamdallah, had been designated to form a new government. He takes over from outgoing Prime Minister Salam Fayyad, who resigned in April but had stayed on as caretaker. Mr. Hamdallah told Palestinian radio he would move quickly to form a new government. He says this government will be a continuation of the previous government, and the majority of ministers will keep their portfolios. He said it would be part of the reconciliation effort between Mr. Abbas's Fatah movement, which controls the West Bank, and the rival Hamas movement that has controlled Gaza for the past 6 years. Relations between the two groups have been tense since the Hamas takeover in Gaza. Fatah and Hamas signed a reconciliation accord in Cairo 2 years ago, but it has not been implemented. Last month, the two groups agreed to form a unity government by August that would set a date for elections. Mr. Hamdallah, a British-trained linguistics professor, is a member of Fatah. He headed the Palestinian Election Commission for the past 11 years, although he has never run for political office. Fatah spokesman Ahmad Asaf said the party hoped the designation would strengthen the Palestinian cause. He says, "We welcome the president's decision and hope that it will have a positive impact on the Palestinian people." But a spokesman for Hamas, Fawzi Barhoum, condemned the appointment. He says this government is a clone of the previous governments and will not achieve unity for the Palestinian people. He says the appointment is illegal because it was not submitted to the Palestinian Legislative Council and does not include all the different Palestinian groups. The Palestinian Legislative Council has not met since Hamas won controversial elections in 2007 and took power in Gaza the following year. Elections were to be held 4 years ago, but they have been postponed repeatedly. Mr. Hamdallah is viewed as a moderate and a pragmatist. Analysts say he supports Mr. Abbas and, unlike his predecessor, is not likely to challenge him. But the new prime minister is expected to continue Mr. Fayyad's efforts to strengthen governance and combat corruption, a major concern of foreign donors. Scott Bob, VOA News, Jerusalem.
The Turkish Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan has accused anti-government protesters in his country of, as he says, walking arm-in-arm with terrorism, as he blamed extremist elements for 3 days of some of the most violent riots in years in his country. His comments came today as the Turkish Doctors Association said a 20-year-old Turkish man died when the vehicle slammed into a crowd of protesters who were marching late Sunday. It was the first known death related to the demonstrations. Speaking to reporters before departing on a planned 4-day trip to North Africa, Mr. Erdogan dismissed the protests as the work of secularist enemies who never accepted the mandate of his Islamist AKP party, which has won 3 straight elections. He rejected comparisons with the Arab Spring Uprising, saying in televised comments that the protesters had no support in the general population and giving no indication he was prepared to compromise. Dorian Jones in Istanbul with our report.
Demonstrators in Istanbul clashed with security forces well into Sunday night in some of the worst violence seen since civil unrest broke out here 3 days ago. There are reports of injuries and mass arrests in the violence, which occurred close to the Prime Minister's office. Confrontations in Ankara also continued into the night. after a day of unrest. Demonstrations are spreading across the country. Authorities say 1,700 people have been detained, although most have been released. But at Istanbul's Taksim Square, ground zero for the protest movement, Sunday passed without incident, with thousands of people peacefully gathering to demonstrate. It was the violent police crackdown on Friday against citizens protesting a planned shopping mall that gave birth to the largest protest movement the country has seen in decades. The protesters accusing Prime Minister Erdogan of increasingly acting in an authoritarian way and seeking to impose a conservative agenda on society. These demonstrators say the Prime Minister has to change course.
He has a huge ego and he can do very, very bad things. I mean, he can use normal bullets against his people. I had to be here to show everybody that we are here, we are looking for our rights. We are looking for especially our freedom of speech. So, well, for me, we had to do it.
Many of the demonstrators are young and appear not affiliated with any political party. The protest movement is made up of a wide cross-section of society. Rich, poor, students and workers, even well-known professional sportsmen have joined the protests. But Prime Minister Erdogan remains defiant. On Sunday, he described the protesters as marauders and looters, and even described Twitter as evil. Twitter is the mainstay for the protesters to communicate. He also blamed party politics for the unrest.
Sandıkta başarı sağlayamayanların...
He said, "We think the main opposition party, which is making resistance calls on every street, is provoking these protests. They are manipulating a peaceful protest because they were unable to beat me at the ballot box." But the main opposition parties have been careful to avoid being too closely associated with the protests. Observers say the protesters' rallying call of individual freedom for now appears to be striking a chord within Turkish society. With demonstrators and the Prime Minister refusing to back down, the battle of wills is growing. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul, Turkey.
Russia and the European Union are beginning 2 days of talks, overshadowed by disputes over the EU's strong backing of the Syrian opposition and Moscow's continued support for President Bashar al-Assad. The EU decided last week to lift the arms embargo on the Syrian opposition, clearing the way for member states to supply weapons to anti-Assad fighters at a later date. The summit comes as Russia and the United States continue to try to arrange an international peace conference that would bring together both the Syrian government and the opposition, pushing to oust the Syrian president. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov said Monday that the United States is not putting enough pressure on the Syrian opposition to participate in the international talks and to drop its demand for President Assad's exit. The Syrian government has said it is willing to attend such a conference in principle, but the main opposition coalition has rejected the idea. Lebanon's parliament has voted to postpone elections scheduled for June 16th because of security concerns over the unstable security situation in that country brought on by the conflict in neighboring Syria. Paige Kalak reports from Beirut.
The decision by Lebanese lawmakers to postpone elections and extend their mandate until November 2014 is the first time they have done so since the Lebanese civil war ended in 1990. The move comes after an uptick in violence in recent weeks due to the war in neighboring Syria. Sami Nader, an international relations professor at St. Joseph University, says the decision sends a damaging message to a Lebanese public craving political stability.
People are losing hope. It's the wrong signal for the youth, because youth are giving up attachment to Lebanon, and because they are considering that they are living in a kind of a jungle. It's the wrong message for tourists. It's the wrong message for investors and foreign investments. So it's a wrong message all across the line.
Lebanese are ideologically divided over the Syrian war. The so-called March 14th coalition, which is supported by the West, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, sides with the Syrian opposition. The March 8th coalition, aligned with Iran, supports Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Nader says the two coalitions cannot agree on much. Tensions have risen since the political and militant Shiite movement Hezbollah announced it is fighting alongside Syrian government forces. Nader says the two coalitions cannot agree on much.
They never agreed on forming a new government. They never agreed on a unified foreign policy. They only agree to extend their power. The major driver for security in a country, diversified country like ours, the security system has to rely on a solid political agreement. So they were pretexting the security situation, but they are the responsible of the security situation. I mean, this was so paradoxical.
Outside the parliament building in downtown Beirut, protesters threw tomatoes at lawmakers' cars and carried coffins symbolizing the burial of democracy. Following the vote, lawmakers said they want to take advantage of the additional time to work on reaching an electoral law that would provide fair representation. Paige Kollek for VOA News, Beirut, Lebanon.
A suicide bomber targeting a U.S. military convoy in eastern Afghanistan has killed at least 10 schoolchildren, one Afghan police officer, and two coalition service members. Local officials say the bomber was on a motorcycle when the attack happened Monday in the Samkhani district of Paktia province near the Pakistani border. The U.S.-led NATO coalition said in a statement two of its service members died but did not identify their nationality. Also on Monday, seven people died in Langdam province when their vehicle struck a landmine. Members of the Afghan Taliban say they have met with Iranian officials and clergy in Iran, despite deep differences in Muslim ideology between the two. Sharon Bain reports from Islamabad that some analysts see the move as part of Tehran's push to increase its influence in Afghanistan as international combat forces prepare to leave the country.
According to a Taliban statement released in Kabul, two groups of Taliban militants were recently in Iran at the invitation of the Tehran government. One group was on an unspecified three-day visit, while a second took part in an Islamic conference. Afghan Foreign Ministry spokesman Janan Mosazai had little to say on the reported talks. He says the Kabul government is in touch with the Islamic Republic of Iran to confirm these reports. But before hearing from them, he thinks there is no need for further comment on this issue. Analysts differ as to the significance and impact of the contacts between Iran and the Taliban insurgents, who have waged war against the Kabul government and its international allies. Both share a deep animosity towards the United States. Davood Moradian, a former senior policy advisor to Afghan leader Hamid Karzai, says the contacts have been quietly going on for years. But he says the latest public development is worrying for Afghanistan because it appears the Taliban is trying to show itself as a viable political alternative to the current government.
It is very unfortunate because it further undermined the authority of the Afghan government. Now Taliban's are being projected or are becoming as a kind of a parallel government, competing with the central government in Kabul. And Afghanistan cannot afford to have a formal government in Kabul and a de facto government based in Qatar.
The Afghan and U.S. governments hope that by encouraging the opening of an office for Taliban representatives in Qatar, peace talks could be held there to negotiate an end to the violence in Afghanistan. So far, those peace talks have not taken place. Instead, the Taliban's annual spring offensive has been particularly brutal this year. Alex Vatanka of the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C., says Iran is looking to play a larger role in the region, possibly teaming up with such potential partners as Russia and India.
I think if the Iranians could have their way, would like to be the key player there. But that's not going to happen, so they're just trying to presumably assess their overall options, and clearly you cannot ignore the fact that Taliban is reality on the ground in Afghanistan.
Vatanka says if the Tehran government shows it can influence the Taliban in Afghanistan, it can present itself as an inevitable partner in solving the conflict. But former Afghan presidential adviser Mouradian says that is a misreading of the situation, as any convergence of interests would be seen only if the talks included the government of Afghanistan. He says it is the Taliban that will benefit the most from contacts with Iran.
And what they're trying to do is to multiply their sanctuary. They are assured of Pakistan now. They have office in Qatar. Soon they would have an office in Tehran.
Reports of the talks in Iran came as the Taliban and other militant groups have been ramping up attacks on Afghan security forces. On Monday, a suicide bomber apparently targeting a U.S. military convoy in eastern Afghanistan detonated explosives that killed schoolchildren and international soldiers. International combat forces are set to leave Afghanistan by the end of 2014. The latest attacks are seen as a test of Afghan security forces, who will take full control of the country following the withdrawal. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Islamabad.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Paul Westfeeling in Washington. More news and information on our website, MiddleEastVoices.com. That's MiddleEastVoices.com.